Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous fluoridated capital of Auckland is what I choose to call home. On the Fukushima irradiated coastlines, where everybody has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb and you can't see the stars at night, not because of the fog, but because of the light pollution, because everybody glows in the motherfucking dark. Okay, and my very special guest today is Lorien Fendon, who's a super soldier, experienced person, and I'll let her introduce herself. Lorien, welcome to the program.
Oh, Vinny, thanks so much for having me on today. And, you know, I don't think I'm an actual super soldier, because if you get into the definition of super soldier, I don't quite cut the mustard because I wasn't in the military and I wasn't used in any program where they enhance my bone structure or put nanites in me or use me for any kind of black ops or did anything like that that I know of.
Well, okay? I said super soldier experience.
I am. I'm a super soldier experienced ringleader. That's what I am.
Yeah, I mean, that'd actually be great, like a great music concert, the super soldier experience.
Well, you know, we had the super soldier experience, and that is the super soldier summits that I've been putting on for the last 2 years since my experience that led me down the path of trying to help the super soldiers. And eventually it turned into I'm not just helping the quote unquote super soldiers. I'm actually helping the people that are under these mind control programs.
Any relationship to the Magical Mystery Tour?
I wish it was. You know, the last one felt like that. And as I tell the audience about my story today, they're going to find out that it really was a magical mystery tour I was on. It was quite wild. And if you don't mind, Vinny, I'm just going to cut to the chase and get right to it and tell everybody how I happened to have my experience with the super soldiers and when it turned into me getting mad enough that I said, I'm going to expose these people. I'm going to put on a conference and I'm going to get them all together and expose the dark cabal that is the people, you know, in charge somewhere between the military, the Illuminati, and who knows what else, probably an alien faction as well, maybe even the Nazis, and definitely the people who do the satanic ritual abuse to their children. They're all involved in this. It's a very big pie. When I first got into it, I thought it was just, oh, quote unquote, the super soldiers. And then, boy, man, after I jumped into that rabbit hole, I learned a whole bunch. But what I'd like to do right now is just start with how it all happened to me so the world gets to know who I am, what I'm about, and why I do what I do. And then hopefully in the second hour, if they all show up, I'm going to have Aaron Hicks with us. Aaron Green Hicks will be in the second hour, and James Rink will be with us in the third hour. And we'll just banter about the whole, you know, Super Soldier Summits and how they were involved and just have a good old round
table. We could tell stories. This one time at Super Soldier Camp.
You know what? I wish it was a fun time at Super Soldier Camp, but I'll tell you about that a little later. So anyhow, what happened to me was in September of 2011, I was, I better go back just a little notch here because I need to explain how I ended up at that conference. It was the Awaken Aware Conference, September 2011, I think it was the 22nd and 23rd. But getting to that conference, earlier in May, I had taken on a speaker, author type person that's my job in real life, folks, is I manage speakers, authors, and TV personalities and people who are in the UFO community and, you know, people write about Bigfoot and, you know, you name it, I help manage those people and get their books out there and get them speaking engagements. So I was on my way to go down to this Awaken Aware conference that Project Camelot was putting on to promote four of the people I was representing at the time. Back in May, before that September, that fall, I was on the phone with one of the women that I was representing, and I was talking to her, and suddenly, without noise and without warning, a black helicopter came over my house and hovered and circled for about 3 to 4 minutes, and it was very loud, very disconcerting, because I was talking to her on the phone, and she could hear it. I mean, that's how loud this thing was, and she's in Hawaii, and she can hear this thing over the phone loud as day, and I sent my roommate out to see what color it was, because I couldn't see it. All I could do is hear it, and he went out there and said, yes, there's definitely a very low, he could even see the guy sitting in the on the side of the by the navigator, but in the doorway, he could see a guy sitting in the doorway there with his legs hanging out. So, and it was a black helicopter, some guy sitting there with his legs hanging out, and they're circling my house at about maybe 150 feet above it. And it's so loud, I could barely talk on the phone, and I didn't hear it coming. And that was the weirdest part, because I was like, suddenly they were there. And I said to her, I said, do you hear that? She said, yeah. And I sent him out. He said, yeah, it's out there. It's a black helicopter. Can't believe the guy's not falling on the house. And a couple minutes later, they slowly took off, and I could hear them leaving. So I thought that was very interesting. I had just made my mind up that day, pretty much during that phone call with her, that I was going to start putting on some more radical conferences. I wasn't sure what they were yet. I wasn't sure how I was going to do it. I was just producing UFOCon in San Francisco at the time, also besides managing speakers and authors. And I thought maybe I'd do some other things as well. So that's...
Is that one of those moments where it's like...
Yeah, it was worse than that, Vinny, because I didn't correlate it at the time. But later, and you'll hear what happened later on, then it all made sense as to why it showed up at that point, because I had made that decision. But it didn't dawn on me then what it was all about, why they were there, and what they were doing. Okay, so now fast forward now to September, and I actually end up at that conference with the woman that I'm on the phone with in Hawaii that I'm representing. She met me in LA. We went to Anaheim. We're staying at a house. We go down to Orange County for the conference. It's Friday. We set up our table because I have a table out in the lobby as a vendor, and Carrie was kind enough to, you know, give me a table because she wanted to talk to me about some of the people that I was representing. So she said, yeah, bring your stuff down, you know, promote them, and we'll talk. And so it was great. So I get down there, and it's Friday night. Duncan O'Finian is on stage with his girlfriend, Miranda, and she goes by the nickname of Axe. So this is the first time she's ever speaking. Acellaria Liberalis is the woman that I'm representing. She's sitting next to me in the audience. We're listening to them talk, yak, yak, yak. I'm here. I've heard Duncan quite a few times by this point, and I was pretty impressed with the Super Soldier, the whole experience and what these guys have gone through. And I was thinking to myself, geez, maybe I should put on a conference for them. God, in hindsight, I wish I had never had that thought, but that's what I'm thinking. It's Friday night, and I think, God, I wonder why no one else has ever done it for them, you know, because there are quite a few of them, and I wonder what's going on with that. I think I'll do that. So while I'm listening to this presentation, Miranda says, oh, yeah, and there's this thing, I hear a voice screaming in my head all the time in the back of my head. It's not in the forefront. It's always there in the back. And I look around the room, and I'm looking, and nobody else is reacting. And I'm going, that's odd, because a few years earlier, I had noticed that for 20-some-odd years, or a few years earlier, I had gotten rid of the screaming in the back of my head, and had it been there for 20 years. So I was like, oh my God, that has been happening to me most of my life. And because in my 20s, I started meditating, and I was always hearing the screaming in the back of my head. And I thought, oh my God, this is really weird. I don't want to know about it. And I pretty much, during the day, it would not be a problem. I would never hear it, blah, blah, blah. And then I'd fall asleep. And just at that point where you're falling asleep, I would always hear it. And I'm waking up in the morning, and I would hear it. And I always thought to myself, well, that's odd. It must be some kind of psychological thing that happened to me as a kid that I don't remember. Maybe it was when I was getting my tonsils out. Maybe, you know, maybe it's when I was a kid and I ate rat poisoning and I was in the hospital. Maybe it's just some kind of leftover residual psychic scar, you know, psychological scar. So I'm thinking, okay, that's got to be it. So I never paid much attention to it until that moment in 2011, sitting in the audience going, huh, I wonder if that has something to do with what was happening to me. Now, I have to also specify that I had stopped hearing that voice a couple years before this event happened, when she was talking about the voice in the head screaming. And I don't know why it stopped. It just stopped. And I'm very grateful that I don't ever hear it anymore. And it's just wonderful. But anyhow, so I said to my friend, I said, ooh, you know, that's really odd. Have you ever had a screaming in the back of your head? Your voice in the back of your skull screaming? She said, oh, no, I've never had anything like that. So I'm thinking, oh, God, I wonder how weird that is. So and then it's over. And she says to me, oh, I really want to talk to them. They have some answers to something that I know that they can help me with what I'm doing, my research. And I said, I don't really want to talk to them right now. So by the time the speech was over, I'd gone from, oh, I really want to help these guys, to I'm not sure I ever want to talk to them again or to them ever. And she's like, oh, we have to talk to them. I said, no, no, no. So I said, let's get out of here. So it was the end of the evening, and I just basically snuck us out of the place and got us out of there before we ran into anybody. And it was great. Went home Friday, no problems. Went back Saturday and listened to a full day of people talking. And she kept coming back to the table going, you know, I really want to talk to Duncan and Miranda. And they were really busy all day and she could never get to him. And she said, you know, we've really got to talk to him. And by that time, I had time to sleep on it. I was thinking about it. And I thought, you know what, maybe I will do a conference for these guys. So I found Aaron McCullen that day. And I went up to him and his wife and their beautiful dog. I love their dog. And said to them, hey, you guys, why are you not on stage, you know, at this event? And he goes, well, Duncan and I aren't getting along right now. And Duncan was the first person Carrie asked. So he's on stage this weekend and we'll do another one, another event some other time. And I said, well, if I put on a conference for you guys, do you think that you and Duncan would get along well enough to be able to at least be on stage together or on stage at separate times and be okay? And he said, yeah, yeah, I'd be fine with that. And I said, great. Well, and it kind of sparked me and I thought, well, maybe I should do a conference for these guys. No one else seems to be picking up the mantle. Maybe I'll do it. So I told them to that effect. I said, let me gather up other people and see if I can do something, and we'll talk more. So that day goes by, and it's the end of the night, and I'm still having a queasy feeling about talking to Duncan and Miranda, even though I know I have to at some point. And Ace Laurie again says, we've got to go talk to him. We've got to find him. And I said, nah, let's do it tomorrow before we leave. So I pack up our stuff and I'm running out the door. And again, I'm trying to sneak out of the place. And we go around the corner of the building away from everybody. And lo and behold, who's standing right there smoking cigarettes by the trash can is Duncan and Miranda. So we run right into him. So we start talking. And I basically said to Axe, I said, look, I've had screaming in the back of my head for many years. Do you think I should pursue, you know, figure out what it was? She looked at me, and I'll never forget this, Vinny. It was the weirdest sensation. She looked at me and she said, Lorian, maybe you don't want to know about it. And I looked at her and I said, you know, you're right. I don't want to know. And then we proceeded to talk about the conference. If I put one on, would they want to do it? And they said, yes, blah, blah. And I left and I was kind of like, this is very interesting. Now, this is where it gets really spooky for me. So we get back to our house in Anaheim. We have dinner. Things are fine. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I think it was about three. Ace Laurie and I had been up talking all night and she finally went to bed. I walked into my room and I sat down, on the edge of the bed, and I went to open my laptop on a little table by the side of the bed. And I'm thinking to myself, Vinny, I'm thinking, I wonder if Ace Laurie remembers the day that we were on the phone and the helicopter came over the house. And the minute I thought that, now, you know, it wasn't that long of a thought. It's an instantaneous thought, and it's not a sentence. It's more of a, like, you know, imprint that you think, right? And I think it, and instantaneously, Vinny, there is a helicopter over the house. just like there was in my house that day back in May. And I am now I'm paralyzed. I'm sitting on the edge of the bed. Now, I did not hear it get there, just like the first one. And it's loud. And now that I think about it, I've had a lot of time to think about the reaction of the neighborhood. In my mind, I was thinking that everybody else was waking up because I saw some lights going on. Oh, excuse me for just a second. I need to cough here. Hold on.
And make sure you turn your head when you do it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's just your friend at TSA agent speaking.
You know, this is funny because every time I try to talk about this, my throat gets constricted. It's very weird. I don't think they want me talking about it. So
I think it's fear.
Yeah, it could be. It could be just me reacting. I don't know. But anyhow. So
well, it brings scary thoughts to mind, does it not?
Well, yeah, wait to hear the rest of it. I mean, it just gets crazier. So I'm sitting on the side of the bed. This helicopter is over the house. It's really loud. It's really low. Never heard it coming. And I decide to stand up and look out the window at it. Okay, so I'm kind of in the center of the room, paralyzed. I've got two windows, one to the left up high that I can't see anything out of except for some lights I think are turning on and off in the neighborhood. And then I walk to the lower window right in front of me, and I look out, and I don't see a helicopter. What I see are, in a triangle shape, pretty high up, but not so high that they aren't pretty big inside. I'd say thumbnail size if I put my thumb out. Three red, ember red glowing lights in a triangle shape. And it's very dark, and I can't make out if it's a triangle spacecraft or not. But it's not a helicopter, and it's stationary, and it's not moving. So this is the weird part. Now, my brain now is going, wait, where's the helicopter? I'm seeing three lights. They're not moving. They're in a triangle shape, which tells me it's a spacecraft. And then my brain just kind of shuts down, and I back away from the window. And I'm standing in the center of the room listening to this helicopter, knowing there's no helicopter really, but there's something else out there. And I don't know what's going on. And then just as quick as it came, and then maybe this was about a minute, minute and a half into it, it flies away. And then I go back to the window, and the three red lights are gone. So I'm like, okay, this is just the weirdest thing. I wonder if anybody else has been paying attention to this. So go to bed, get up in a few hours. I ask everybody in the house, hey, did you guys all hear that helicopter last night? And everybody said, nah, we didn't hear anything. So this is where I'm starting to wonder. I mean, it's been a few years now, and I'm starting to wonder if this, and now that I know much more about mind control and what the government's doing to people and how they manipulate people and they program them, I'm beginning to wonder if they just didn't fly a triangle-shaped helicopter over the place and send the thought to me that there was the helicopter there. And it wasn't really a helicopter at all like it was the first time. So this is what's going through my head now, several years later. So I just thought I'd share that with your audience because for the first 2 years up until about a few months ago, I was thinking it was truly a helicopter and a spacecraft. Then I thought it was just a spacecraft making the noise. And now I'm wondering if the noise was even there for anybody else to audibly hear. So I'm taking it all, you know, many levels on this. So people understand how complex this really is getting.
Well, in essence, that's why it's so confusing. And things that are confusing that you can't make sense of can be quite stressful.
Yeah. I mean, they really do freak you out. I mean, it's like, and believe me, once it happens to you, you never forget it. You spend the rest of your life trying to analyze it and find an answer. And, you know, Vinny, I got to say, I'm one of the lucky people that is being, you know, bothered by these programming things because I usually don't have any other problems. I don't have any stress. I don't have anything going on. And I don't obsess over them. Like, if I never find out what that was over the house, I'm fine. I don't care. You know, I'm emotionally stable. People probably think I'm nuts. Loony as a tune right now. But to be honest with you guys, I'm pretty dang concrete, grounded person. So for me to just say, okay, I'll let it go, that's, that in this community, that's a sign of somebody who doesn't get controlled by them very much, because I don't know if you've interviewed a lot of these people, but they get to the point where they get obsessed and all they want to know is why me, you know, what was that, you know, and they incessantly bother people about what's going on with them, and they become, you know, very much on the edge. They certainly need some anxiety medication after a while, and they end up, and I hate to say this, this is really a bad thing to say, but they usually end up in their parents' basement and never go out again, you know, in their entire life. And it's very tough and it's hard on them, but you know, the best thing you can do if you're involved in this, and this is for anybody out there listening, if you've had a mind control situation where something's happened to you that's pretty much unexplainable, the best thing to do is let it go and don't worry about it. Unless it's threatening your life or something horrible is going to happen to you, or, you know, if your dog's getting killed, or, you know, I mean, it's got to be something very violent and awful for me to react like that. For something odd and strange to happen to you like that, you've got to let it go. You can't become obsessed and ask every other, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry for an answer, because no one's got it for
you. Well, it causes depression and anxiety. It's like Lao Tzu in China, he said, if you're thinking only of the future, you live in anxiety. If you're thinking only of the past, you're living in depression. If you're thinking only of the now, you're living in peace.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And luckily enough, I've hit that point with everything that's happened to me in my life. And but I'm old. I got to say, I am 56 years old. So this happened to me very late in life. So maybe I'm a lot more grounded than the younger people that it happens to. And I can kind of understand their obsession with it because, you know, they haven't lived enough to say, hey, you know, it doesn't matter. Your life is your life and you're in control. And that's the most important thing people have to.
But did you have parents satanically abuse you?
No, nothing like that. I grew up normal, just a normal kid in Southwest Portland, Oregon. My father was a land developer. My mom was a homemaker. You know, just very normal life, except for the Catholic indoctrination. I went to a Catholic grade school, so, you know, I did get a lot of that. But, you know, I had a normal existence. Anyhow, I was chosen for this, Vinny. I think somewhere along the line they said, let's let her be the one that gets to bring these guys all together for some reason. So,
I disagree with those kind of fatalistic predeterminations. What I think is that people take actions in their life and they choose to see them through rather than thinking that it's not worth it. And it's usually not because they're wanting something for themselves. It's because they have a moral obligation to do something for other people that only they can do.
And there you go. Maybe that's what happened to me. The minute I decided to do that conference back in May when the first helicopter came over, or not a conference, but any kind of thing I could do to help these guys or anybody that needed it, then maybe that was the moment that this all, you know, became solid for me, that I had to do it. And I think you're right about that. Hmm. I think it's important that people understand that, you know, if you say, I'm going to help, if you tell the cosmos, I'm going to help somebody somewhere, somehow, and serve them, then there you go. You got to do it, I guess. And if you don't do it, who knows what will happen to you?
You usually become depressed alcoholics.
Well, that's true.
I've seen this with so many people. Like, I remember I had a school chum in high school, and he was brilliant. Like had intelligence brains up to wazoo. But all he did all the time was just get wasted and try to deny how brilliant he was. And as a result, he's now living a life of no consequence.
Oh, that's too bad. See? That's what I think. Everybody's got to get brave and help other people at some point in their life. I think it's very important. You know, it's the old service to self, service to others thing. I really think that's very important on this planet, especially now. We got a lot of problems here. But anyhow, if you don't mind, I'm going to continue my story so we can get through it in the next the rest of the hour. So that really, that evening, I got to say, was probably the pinnacle point of my whole life changing in an instant, because that's when I realized that whoever they are, they can be in anybody's head in any moment at any time, and when they have a thought, they can do a thought or an action right back at you if you're on the radar. And that really blew my mind. I mean, it took me a few months to wrap my head around that one. And but anyhow, there's more to the story, and then you'll understand why it took me a few months to wrap my head around it. So we go back to the conference. It's the last day. It's Sunday. And I needed to speak with Bill Ryan about one of my people that I was representing. So I'm seeking him out. It's later in the afternoon. I think Sean David Morton had just spoke. And Bill was sitting near the front. And I walked up to him, and he had this young kid kneeling down with him in front of him with this cube. And they were both meditating over this cube. And so I got very involved in what they were doing. And I'm watching, and I'm kind of like zoning out over this cube thing. And the kid gets done talking to Bill, and they had a great time. And he gave him the cube and thanked him for his time. And then he jumped up, and he looked at me, and he says, "Hey, I'm a super soldier." And I went, "Oh, okay." He goes, "I heard you're doing something for us." I said, "Oh, I am? Okay." I said, "Meet me at my table later and we'll talk." And he goes, "Okay, great." And he says, "Oh, by the way, my name's James Rank." And I said, "Okay, wonderful." So Bill Ryan and I spoke, and then the whole day's winding down. I ended up back at the table, and I had forgotten that I told James to come over to the table. But just as we were packing up the last of our items, two guys came by the table, and I'm looking down, and Ace Ilaria looks up and says hi to James. And I look up at his companion, and the first words out of my mouth are, "My God, I know you." And my whole body just went into this whole, like, total recognition of this person. Like, I'd known him forever, and it was the strangest form of deja vu I've ever had in my entire life, and way beyond like my first husband. When I met him, I knew I had been with him in a previous lifetime, and I just kind of knew that, and I knew the story a little bit, but it took me years to figure it all out. But this guy, it was like 20 times more powerful, and I was really blown away, because it was at the same time I was reconnecting with him, I was also deathly afraid to be around him, and I couldn't quite figure out what was going on, and I was kind of freaked out, but I acted like everything was fine. And he introduced himself, and he says, "Hi, I'm Max Spears." And I said, "Oh, well, okay, great to know you." I said, "Do you remember me from anywhere? Have we met?" And he goes, "No, not that I know of." But he goes, you look familiar in a weird way." And I said, "Yeah, okay, cool." And I just let it go. And then we spend another couple hours with them. And then we decide to go back to the house for dinner together. So we end up at the place till about 3 o'clock in the morning, had a great dinner. We were talking all about super soldiers. And I promised the two of them that I would put on a conference for, well, at that point, it was James Rank, Max Spears, Aaron McCollum, and Duncan O'Finian, and Axe, Duncan's girlfriend. So I had 5 people already in the conference to speak. So, and he said he knew a couple other people, and I said, "Great, and, you know, it sounds like an interesting time." But I must tell everyone, during that conversation, a lot of Nazi information came out. A lot of satanic stuff came out, and every time Max would start talking about this, I would get sick to my stomach. I could barely eat dinner that night, and I was feeling weirder than I felt, and I can't even describe it. It's the only time I've ever felt like that, and it was just strange. It was like I was sick and happy all at the same time that I found this person that I had lost, but sick at realizing what had happened to me or something. I couldn't even place it. So they leave, and I'm, you know, I never tell them all this while it's happening, of course. I'm just going with the punches and listening to the stories and planning conferences and blah, blah, blah. So I go to bed. It's now 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. About 8 o'clock in the morning, I start to wake up. And I can only describe this to people as a full-blown recall experience memory that I'm seeing as in a semi-awake dream state. And I can't tell you guys all about it because it's beautiful and loving and horrific and horrible all at the same time. But I was being tortured in one part. I was being there's a lot of sexual stuff going on in other parts. I was being twinned with Max. And the only way I can describe twinning is that they take your souls and they basically melt you together in this euphoric love connection. And I think Eve Lorgan talks about this quite a bit in her books about the alien love bite. Whoever is in charge of these mind control programs or the super soldier programs or whatever they are called, they definitely use that against the people that they're working with. They usually start out by making them fall in love and then they torture them. And the falling in love isn't like a normal falling in love. It's more like a metaphysical, spiritual, chemical falling in love. And since this whole experience happened to me, I have figured out that they use our endocrine system, all of our, you know, hormones and what have you, just like you're playing a fiddle, to make us do their bidding. And I'll go into that much more in detail in the next hour with Aaron. But that's what I figured out. It's taken me 2 years to figure that out. It was kind of in the forefront at the beginning of my experience, but later on it really became the answer to the quest for me figuring out what had happened to me. Anyhow, so I'm not going to bore you guys anymore with the details of what happened, but I will say one more thing about it. In this experience, I'm 17 or 18, and Max is 20 or 22. And we're very young. Now, in this reality, I'm 56 and Max is 36. So, you know, quite a bit of difference there. And and I'm beginning to wonder if there wasn't some time shifting going on when this all happened. And I'm not even sure it happened now and maybe not have happened in another lifetime or didn't happen in the future. Or they just took us whenever we were. Maybe he was in reality, 20 and I was 40 when they made this all happen and made us think we were 17 and 22. I have no idea. But I came out of it. And I was so upset, folks. I mean, I never cry. I mean, I do cry once in a while, but I don't cry like this. I went into a 3.5-hour crying jag over the whole experience because it was love, it was torture, it was happy, it was extremely sad, it was everything horrible and loving all in one, and I've never experienced anything like that. And God forbid anybody have to go through that kind of recall memory, because I'm not, like I said, I'm not sure it was all real. But after I came out of it, and I got my senses together, and I drove Asolari and myself back to San Francisco, where I live, I decided, I was so pissed. After I came out of being mad, being sad and crying, I got so pissed off. I said, there's no way in hell these guys are going to stop me. I'm now putting on that conference. I am going to call it the Super Soldier Summit, and we are going to get to the bottom of how this all happens and occurs. So that pretty much is in a nutshell about what happened to me and how I got involved with this. Since that experience, I have discovered that we're pretty sure, and this is a consensus about this from the 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 people that I'm now involved with in the super soldier mind control arena, they're pretty convinced I was used for some kind of DNA splicing into the super soldier program, that they use my DNA. And one of the reasons they probably use my DNA is I have now discovered, besides being negative blood type and a descendant of the Stewart family and the Pruitts and the Fentons, which are all were major players and minor players back in the day of royalty. I had no idea. I didn't even find this out till about a year ago myself. The fact that since I was a kid, I've been pretty psychic, and they're all thinking that that's probably the reason why. There was one day, and I don't know if any of you know this story. I may have told you about it on the last time I was on, but I don't think so. Did I mention manifesting a bunny rabbit when I was 7 years old?
No, not at all.
Okay. Well, I'm going to quickly tell that story because I think that might have something to do with everything now, because it seems to be in, you know, people tell me that that may be the reason why they were looking at me to put me into this program, is because of my abilities as a child, because I certainly don't have those now. I wish I did. I wouldn't be paying rent. You know, I'd be manifesting money left and right and be in the Caribbean somewhere. But what I did is I went to the state fair with my grandparents and my two younger sisters, and we were at the 4-H. I don't know if they have 4-H down in New Zealand, but it's where the kids, you know, they raise their animals on their farms, and then they all get together at the state fairs and get ribbons for the best animals. Do they do that down there?
Yeah, I think the thing they do, we call them P&A shows, or farm shows and things of that nature. That's kind of what you're talking about, guys with the biggest pumpkins, biggest balls, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. At our state fairs, we have, you know, a competition for the 4-H kids about who's, you know, raising the best livestock or, you know, whatever you're doing. So, anyhow, the bunny rabbit I fell in love with, where, you know, we walk into this area, there's like 50 cages of bunny rabbits. I fell in love with this black bunny with floppy ears, and he'd won like first prize, and he belonged to this brother and sister, I remember that, and they let me hold him. I just sat down and held him for like a half hour, and I just fell madly in love with this rabbit. I wanted him so bad. My grandparents came up to me and said, oh, you can't have him, he belongs to them, and you know, he just won a prize, he's got to go home, blah blah blah. So I'm very upset. But instead of crying, I start saying, well, I want a bunny. I'm going to get a bunny, and you guys are going to give me a bunny. I kept just like saying, you know, positive affirmation type of things. I don't know why I did it. I was only 7. But instead of crying and having a fit, I just kept saying, will you get me a rabbit? You know, I just kept bugging them about it. And all the way home in the car. And now you got to remember, this is back in 63 or 64. There are no seat belts. You're not strapped in like, you know, the world is going to fall on you, and you know, you're going to get in a car crash in a minute. That was the days you could lean over the front seat of the big car and talk to your grandparents while they're driving. So I kept saying, will you get me a bunny rabbit? Will you ask Mom and Dad to get me a bunny rabbit? I really want a bunny rabbit. So I sat there and I prayed. I prayed for about the last 4 miles going home. And I sat there with my little hands folded, and I remember thinking, I love that bunny rabbit so much. I wish I could have that bunny rabbit. And I kept thinking that and thinking that. We got to the driveway of the house, and it was a farm road, and you got to go up. We had a big gate in front of it. My grandfather gets out to open the gate, and he opens the gate, and what's sitting there but the exact replica of the bunny I just left, sitting right in the middle of the driveway. And my grandfather... He went pale. He's looking at my grandmother. They're both looking at me. My two sisters are screaming, there's the rabbit. And everybody's all happy. But my grandparents are just like, what? How did this rabbit show up? The same rabbit, same kind of rabbit, same color rabbit in the middle of the driveway. And it's not running away from anybody. So he picks it up and he gets in the car and he hands it to me. He goes, I guess this is yours. And then he looks at my grandmother and says, looks like I'm building that hutch after all. It was quite comical now that I look back on it. So for 3 months, we had the rabbit. My grandfather had to build the hutch, and I was out in the yard playing with it one day, and two kids came up our driveway. They saw me playing with the rabbit, and they said, hey, that's our rabbit. And I said, are you sure? And they go, yeah, we lost it about 3 months ago. And I said, oh, well, yeah, here, go ahead, you can have it back. So I gave it back to them. I had done my rabbit thing. I was quite content. But the moral of the story is that it appeared when I wanted it to and how I wanted it to. And it took me up until I was 53 years old to figure out that people could actually do that kind of thing if you're doing it from a place of pure love and pure, you know, just... It's got to be pure love. I don't even know how to describe it to people, but it's a place where there's no ego involved, there's no need involved, there's no money involved, there's no, you know, it's just a place of pure innocence and love, and you can make things happen. You could also do it when people are very, very sick and you want to help them, and if they're deserving of it, you know, if they lived a good life, and I think they're good people, usually they can accept that kind of love and connection, and it can heal them. I've seen it done before. But that's another whole story for another day. But the whole bunny rabbit thing really has come into play for me as an adult now at 56 years old. Because if I hadn't had that experience then, I would not be able to understand what the evil people out there are trying to do to all these people through this mind control and everything. Not because, folks, anybody can do that. Anybody, what I call anybody, can manifest the bunny. Anybody can do that, and that's what they don't want you to know. They don't want you to know that you're that in that capable spiritually of changing the whole world and changing yourself and changing the life around you, and that we can have anything we need. You know, it's like The Secret. You remember The Secret, Vinny? That movie that came out, and everybody was trying to do it, and they could manifest anything at any time, supposedly? Yeah, that's what I said. Because, you know, the reality to that is it didn't work. Nobody was able to manifest a squat. And it's because they weren't doing it from this.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the big secret. That the secret doesn't fucking work.
Exactly. The secret didn't work. And it was because they weren't coming from a place of pure spiritual innocence. And I really believe, you know, if you've seen the movie Taken, with the little girl who
Liam Neeson. I don't know who you are.
Well,
but
oh,
I have a certain set
one.
Of skills, and you're going to die.
Not that one, but that's a good point. No, it's the one I think where the little girl is finally the last descendant of this whole family of abductees, and there is a big commotion where she's in a house and all these UFOs are descending upon the house and fighting with all the evil military guys and everything. And then they realize she's creating it. It's not that there's evil aliens there. She's creating all this because she has the ability to tap into their minds and make them believe that's what's happening around them. See, that's how capable we are. And that's what the evil people don't want you to know that you can do.
Yeah.
And you really have to do it out of a love and a giving and a soulful place. You can't do it out of evil, greed, and horribleness, you know. It just has to be naive almost. Naive and loving. So, anyhow, that's what happened to me. And that's how I found out I was part of this whole, you know, cabal of super soldier stuff going on. But what's interesting about it all is that I'm not one of them. I am maybe the den. They call me the den mother, den mother of the super soldiers. And I just laugh because, you know, they all find me now. It's very weird, Vinny. I'll be sitting here. It's 2 o'clock.
You need to get yourself some Native American headdress to put on before long.
I know. I'm going to have to do something. You know what I want to do? I want to get a commune going, and I want to have wear my robes and walk out in my goddess outfit. Something
yeah.
like that.
You can have like an Elvis impersonator dressed up like a Native American Indian chief going, hoy, 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 hoy.
Oh my God, would that be funny? Anyhow, so, you know, I just don't know what's happened, but they're all coming to me. It's like, oh my God, the phone's ringing off the hook at 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. A lot of people are calling, people I've never met. And I do put my phone number out there for people. Once they get a hold of me through the SuperSoldierSummit.com website, that SuperSoldierSummit.com website, I usually talk to these people. And, you know, I hate to say this, Vinny, but about 80% of the people who get a hold of me are kind of crazy. And I do have to kind of let them go along their merry way, because I realize there are so many people out there that are just a little lost, and they're not being grounded enough to realize that they're causing their own problems in their life. And they truly are fantasizing some of these things that could be happening to them. But there's a small percentage, maybe it's 10, 15, 20% that there are some very extraordinary things happening to them. And they're documented by them, and they are, you know, on video, or they've written them down, or they've got pictures, or they've got friends and family that could corroborate what they're talking about. And these are the people I take seriously, and I usually end up talking to them for at least a year before I even contemplate putting them out on a stage where they can be talked to by an audience about their experiences as a quote-unquote super soldier or a mind control victim or a targeted individual or whatever it is that, you know, category they may fall under. So, and that's what we do at the Super Soldier Summit. We let people who really want to get out there and tell people about their experiences and share them with people so people understand the kind of horrors that they're doing to people. I let them come up on stage for about 20 minutes to a half hour. On Friday and Saturday night, we have just 2 hours of these people telling about their experiences. And it's quite cathartic for them, and it's quite amazing for the audience. I mean, the audience last year was just blown away by the stories that they were told. Just absolutely blown away. It was mind-boggling. And one of the things I do to keep their anonymity to a minimum is I don't put those actual communications on stage out on video. They are never seen on YouTube or anything like that. What I do put out is the expert presentations. So if you want to see last year's Super Soldier Summit 2, you can go to supersoldiersummit.com and check out the on-demand video and check out the 12, 14, 15 experts that presented at the last summit. It's an amazing array of people. I had Duncan, Robert Duncan, Miles Johnston from the UK was over there at our last summit talking about the BASIS series, which is where I think people really need to get an education. Vinny, are you familiar with Miles Johnston?
No, not at all.
Oh,
I'm familiar with Jack Johnson and Miles Davis, but not Miles Johnson.
You know, he kind of looks like a cross between the two of them, but oh my God.
How did I know that?
I don't know. You're reading my mind. See how clever you are? Anyhow, Miles Johnston is an amazing guy. He started the BASIS series out of the UK, and his first super soldier, I guess, was Barry King. And he's just gone on from there. He's had 24 people on or more that are super soldiers just out of the UK area. And it's just quite fascinating. So you should have him on sometime because he'll blow your audience's mind. But anyhow, so those are the kind of people I've had present at the Super Soldier Summit. And it's just really, I mean, I can't tell you folks how amazing it is. You really should go, you know, listen to last year's. And if you can make this year's, it'll be May 31 and June 1st in Las Vegas at the Gold Coast Casino. And all the information is at supersoldiersummit.com. I only have, this is another thing I don't do, I don't have a lot of seats. There's only 100 and maybe 25 to 50 seats at any conference I put on. They're very small. I call them intimate conferences. They're basically there for the people to that are having these kind of mind control or super soldier or whatever things happening to them. I try to make a very affordable conference, and I try to do it in a kind of medium price range hotel. And I make it so that people can show up and share their experiences with the experts there and with each other. And one of the things I tell people, I say, well, if you're meant to be there, you'll be there, because that's how important it is to you. If you're in the programs, you'll find the money and you'll get there, because that's where you need to be to start your healing, maybe. So last year we had about 100 people there. It was a great conference. People got to sit on Saturday night. We have this dinner where people don't get in a big banquet room and they're 500 feet away from the speaker and don't really get to talk to them. What we do is we go to the buffet and everybody gets to sit with the speaker they have questions for about what may be going on in their life. And then the speaker is there to, you know, talk to them over a nice leisurely dinner. And we spend 2 hours doing that. So that's really a lot of fun for everybody. And they've really enjoyed that whole, you know, a dinner with the speaker event that we have on Saturday night. So, you know, we have lots of ways for you to meet people and you know, maybe get some answers that you need. You know, maybe get some spiritual help from a couple people there. We have some very nice and very thorough, I would say, hypnotherapists there that come and they offer their time and talent to help people regress if they need it. And yeah, so it's a good weekend all the way around for anybody that needs that kind of exposure. So
I do think that these are the most important parts of raising international consciousness, more or less, is that you get the people who are already affected in both the most gifted and the most terrible ways together. Because I think it's when you bring out the exceptional people and you get them together that you create something that none of them, no matter how hard they try, could have come up with on their own.
Oh, exactly. You know, everybody that was at the last summit that spoke came up to me afterwards. Carrie Cassidy included, Melinda Leslie, Robert Duncan, Miles Johnston, everybody came up to me. And they said, Lorianne, the information I learned at your conference this year will stay with me for the rest of my life. It was information that I didn't even know was going on, and I didn't know how evil these people are that are actually, you know, perpetrating this upon these people. And I just had no idea they were that powerful. And it really made me, as a speaker, have to step up my game, because now I know that I'm actually in a battle. You know, up until that point, most of them had just thought they were telling people their stories and what they were doing. And then they realized, and we all realized in that moment, you know, we're really at the forefront of battling these people and getting the word out to the world that this is, and we should not let this be going on anymore. And people need to be aware of it. Instead of laughing at people that, you know, think they hear voices in their head and saying you're psychotic and sending them to a psychiatric hospital, well, you know, maybe 90% of the time that they might need it and that might help them and they may have some real serious psychological issues. But 10% of the time, I'll bet you anything, they're being bombarded by these EMF frequencies that they're doing, these voice-to-skull communications, or scopolamining them where they don't remember anything for 2 weeks out of their life, like I believe the Aurora shooter in Colorado was done to. I believe there was a faction of the dark super soldiers that were actually the shooters in that theater. And, you know, it's funny. People are so blind. I don't know. Did you follow that very much, Vinny? That whole Colorado shooting?
Not really.
Did you see outside of the theater where there was a blood splatter that was it went along the side of the theater all the way to the back of the theater, and it was...
I never saw any images or read any specific articles or anything like that. I just seen, you know, pictures of the shooter that looks like he's been drugged up hugely. And
Yeah. And the fact that his father was involved with the LIBOR scandal in Europe. He was one of the programmers for that whole banking scandal. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Oh, and it gets weirder. One of the guys that was, was it the Boston bombing or the Sandy Hook? But I can't remember now. Oh, yeah, it was Lanza, the kid who was supposedly the shooter at Sandy Hook. His father or mother was supposedly involved in the LIBOR scandal as well in Europe. So, you know, there's two shootings with two people that are involved as programmers or, you know, CEOs of corporations that are involved with the whole LIBOR thing. I thought that was very coincidental. You know, nothing happens by chance when you get to that powerful level of money transactions. I hope people realize that. And, you know, if you
especially if somebody can make something off it.
Oh, yeah. We're talking billions were at stake with that whole LIBOR scandal. So, you know, when they set people up and they aren't playing ball the way they want them to play, you know, I think the kid in Colorado was their number one prime example to anybody in a high CEO position or a high computer tech position that says to them, you mess with us, we're going to take your kids, we're going to scopolamine him for a month, and then we're going to take him and use him to shoot up a theater. And if you don't play ball the way we want you to, this is what's going to happen to you too. And I think it was a prime example to all of them what they could do. At the same time, they used it as, you know, gun control here in America. So, you know, it served two purposes for the evil cabal. They got what they wanted. They got everybody scared at the higher level of the pyramid. You know, I maybe some of them were starting to buck the system. I don't know. But it seemed to me it was put in play just to get them back under control again. So, I mean, that's just my observation as a concerned citizen and a person who's involved with all the mind control. It sure seemed that way to me. So,
Lorian Fenton, ladies and gentlemen, is my very special guest. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We've come to the end of our first hour now. Bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast, and we will be back in the next hour with even more content for you and even more super soldiers. Das Obersoldat is German for the super soldier, ladies and gentlemen, yes. And they also wear dust boots. And we'll be right back.